The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Good morning, hello, good day, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are, whatever time of day it is. I am so excited to have you here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, right here out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, on 100.7 FM KCIW. KCIW is Curry Coast Community Radio, based out of Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the great Pacific Northwest. This is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. I like to say it's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. Where the mountains and the gorgeous, fantastic, fabulous, gorgeous, beautiful old-growth redwoods meet the sea, Harbor in Brookings is home to me. Now, before we get started today talking about nutrition, I'd like to thank the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew, all those folks on the board of directors, the folks that are out there in the community every day who are either raising awareness or raising funds to keep this little station on the air, because this little station, KCIW 100.7 FM, brings you good programming like the Ocean Mist Power Hour and like some of the other awesome programs that are out there that talk about local events, world events, or bring music to you, or even some of them tell stories. Now, if you like what you're hearing on KCIW, hook up with us. If you want to hear something else and you want something different, bring it. Come on now. Go to kciw.org and put in your application to do a show. We're always looking for new and interesting people to bring new and interesting ideas to our awesome audience. So the last thank you I have today is to our audience. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this wherever you are in the world, whether you're right here in Brookings Harbor, Oregon, in our low power FM listening audience, or whether you're on the podcast anywhere in the world. Welcome. We're glad to have you. Now, look, I'm your host, Misty Young, and I talk fast. Bam, I talk really fast. So you have to listen fast. If I'm going to say something and you like what you hear, bam, you better write it down. However, I do repeat things often because I think it's important. If I find something in the nutrition literature or in an article or in a transcript that I'm reading, I'm going to go back to it and say, oh my goodness, did you hear that? So you might get a chance to hear something over again. Wow, was that a rapid introduction or what? Now, before we talk about nutrition, I do want to come back to this idea that this is the home of daffodils in December and flowers all year round and the nicest people you'll ever meet. Why do I say that? Because it's true. There are daffodils here. In December this year, they were blooming before Christmas. Now, where I used to live for 30 plus years in Reno, Nevada, we didn't get our daffodils until early March. Maybe if we were super lucky, they were pushing up a little bit in February. But we get them in December. We get them in the wintertime. Like winter has actually started and bam, here come the daffodils. It's really exciting. And then the flowers all year round. Seriously, the other day I was looking around my yard. There are hydrangeas in bloom. Not pretending to bloom, not thinking about it, but they are blooming. The hydrangeas are there. The camellias are there. The azaleas are there. Don't tell me how or why. I don't get it. I have one of the only azalea plants in town, I guess, that blooms in December, but it's blooming. Beautiful, super soft, sweet little white and pink blossoms. They're so pretty. And then there's a bunch of stuff in my yard that's blossoming that I have no idea what it is or what it's called. All I know is it makes me happy. It brings those big fuzzy black and yellow bees, the really big ones like the size of your thumb, and it brings a lot of hummingbirds. This morning while I was drinking my coffee, I saw some black phoebes on my fence. Those are such beautiful little birdies, and they eat a lot of bugs, which I love because, you know, there's a lot of those in our air too. And I saw a hummingbird shoop, right by, and I said to Gary, did you just see that little hummingbird? And he said, yeah, it made me happy. Made me happy too. I love hummingbirds, and I love all birds. Ah, okay, well, you know, this is my show, so I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about, and thank you for being part of it and for listening. Today, we're going to talk about health, of course. We're going to talk about nutrition, of course. As you know, I love nutrition. It's one of my favorite subjects in the world. I am not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm a nutrition nerd. I hold a certificate from the Health Sciences Academy as a nutritional therapist, and I also hold a plant-based nutrition certificate from the E. Cornell T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Why does that matter? Because I'm a geek, because I'm a nerd, because I hang out reading the science, understanding what it means, and trying every day to apply it to my life, to the life of my husband, to be a light to my family, and it's working, and to a light to the world. I want to help people make better choices for their bodies, for their physical health, for their energy, their vibrance, what they can get out of life. Because you know what? I've been studying massive quantities lately. Like, I barely have been sleeping, and I'm a good sleeper. Like, I have no trouble sleeping. When I decide to sleep, I lay down and I'm like, it's time to sleep. Yay, here we go. Boom, I hit the pillow and I'm gone. And then I sleep pretty solid until the morning and then I like wake up. Not lately. I've got so much information going through my head about nutrition and about communication and about individuals and about results. And something I learned recently is this theory called PQR2. Whoa, what? PQR2, really a trippy thing. And I'm going to give you the quick and dirty version of it because I want you to be thinking about PQR2 in terms of who you are and how it applies to you in your nutrition journey. P is your problems. This is what everybody in the world is walking around with and they're intently focused on all the time. Like, we always think, oh, so-and-so thinks this about me and so-and-so thinks that about me. Guess what? People aren't thinking about you. People really are not thinking about you. They're not thinking about me either. They're not thinking about anything but themselves. They are really supremely focused on their own P, their problems. They're thinking about the problems in their life. And from my perspective, a lot of us, and it shows in the science, doesn't it? A lot of us are thinking about our weight problem, our energy problem, our inflammation problem. We're thinking about our joint stiffness. We're thinking about our physical problems. So the P, we're thinking about our P, our problem. And what happens next is we're asking a lot of questions. A lot of questions about our problems. Again, people aren't thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. They're thinking about their problems. And they're asking questions. They're asking questions of themselves. They're asking questions of the universe. They're just thinking a lot about the questions in their mind about their health, their fitness, their problem. And the questions they're asking is, how do I fix this? How do I make it better? What can I do different? And then what happens is, as they begin to think about what kind of the R2 we're going to get to in a second, what kind of roadblocks are in my way? So they have problems, they have questions, massive questions, constant questions. They have roadblocks to getting the final R, and that's the results that they want. So PQR2 stands for their problems, their questions, their roadblocks, and the results that they want in their life. Now, here's what I want you to know. What we talk about on the Ocean Mist Power Hour when we're talking about nutrition, this is the bridge from PQR to the results side. So if you are like everyone else in the world, let's not say everyone, I don't know, maybe Elon Musk isn't talking about PQR in his head all the time. That guy's talking about making tunnels under LA and making flamethrowers and making electric cars and rolling off new stuff in China. I mean, that guy's outrageous and amazing. So maybe he's not thinking about PQR, or maybe he is. Maybe he's thinking about it in a universal way. What are the problems that people in general have? What are the questions that I can be asking? What are the roadblocks and how do I help get them to the results? He, in some ways, is that bridge. This information that we're going to share in the Ocean Mist Power Hour can be the bridge to help you get from your problems, your questions, your roadblocks to the results that you want in your life. Why am I so passionate about this? Because I've seen it time and time again. People who present with or show up with high blood pressure, boom, they make a change in their life and their blood pressure comes down and they get off their medicine. People who show up with diabetes, their A1C numbers, that's a marker of your blood that shows how high your sugars have been over the course of time, 30, 60, 90 days. When they show up with an A1C number that's out of control in diabetes mode or pre-diabetes mode, and they change what they're doing, they get rid of a roadblock, boom, they get the results they want. People who show up obese or on the edge of obesity, and they make the change that they want, they get rid of the roadblock, they leap over that cliff, or they use the information that we share in nutrition to get to the results they want, boom, they lose the weight. And what happens to the inflammation? It goes away. What happens to the joint pain? It goes away. What happens to the inability to think clearly? It goes away. So if in your head you've got problems, you've got questions, and you've got roadblocks, listen to the nutrition information. I can't hammer on it enough, and I'm going to always hammer on it because I know this for sure. You are not going to drink kerosene. You've heard me say that. You're like, oh my God, why does she always say she's not going to drink kerosene? Because you wouldn't. You wouldn't. But there's nothing in your mind that says don't eat beef. Your beef mind says, well, we should eat beef. Beef is good for us. We should eat meat. Meat is good for us. We should have dairy. We should have cheese. We should have eggs. Those things are good for us. We need protein. Yes, you need protein. You do not need animal products. Your body was not designed to have animal products. Your body is designed to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. And nutrition, the nutrition that you get from fresh fruits and vegetables, the live living enzymes, the proteins, the phytochemicals, all the stuff that comes out of fruits and vegetables is alive and energizing into your body. And it gives you absolutely everything you need. Where, on the other hand, the animal proteins, the animal products are known to be carcinogens. Known. Nobody in the world, in the scientific world, is saying, oh, do you think hot dogs might cause cancer? Do you think maybe like meat, you know, processed meat, do you think it might make people sick? Look, in the medical literature, there's no question. The scientists are not guessing. They are not opinionated about whether or not this causes cancer. It causes cancer. Animal products cause inflammation in your body. Animal products are not healthy for you. Wow. You know, I get so hypered up about it because it is so incredibly revelatory when you get it, when you open up your mind, when you stop and you think about it. The chances of a child becoming obese when one parent is obese is something like 50%. If both parents are obese, the child's obesity index rises to 80% likelihood. I went to a restaurant recently in Grants Pass, Oregon, because they have a salad bar. Now, at this hot salad bar, you know, there's salad and there's hot stuff. There's all kinds of stuff there, right? There's chips and meat and chicken wings and, oh gosh, salsas and pastas and all kinds of cheese and that kind of stuff. But then there's a salad bar there too. So when I'm in, you know, a town where there's a salad bar, I find it. And if I don't know where the salad bar is, I get my phone out and I say, salad bar near me. Because what do I want? I want spinach. I want romaine lettuce. I want beets and peas and corn. I want broccoli and mushrooms and onions. And that's what I make a salad out of. And guess what? I don't put ranch dressing on it and I don't put blue cheese dressing on it. I put some kind of Italian or vinaigrette or whatever. There was a family there. The whole entire family was morbidly obese. And at the head of the table was a little boy. He couldn't have been more than 12 years old. And he was massive. He was massive. He was morbidly obese. And it crushed my feelings. I looked at that poor little boy and I thought, he doesn't stand a chance. In fact, I said something to Gary. I said, that poor kid doesn't stand a chance. He doesn't stand a chance. The example around him was everybody pigging out, literally pigging out, pork, beef, turkey, chicken, pigging out. And he didn't stand a chance. That was the example that he has. My heart grieves for that little boy. And then the other day I was in the market and I saw a similar situation. I followed in behind a family, mom, dad, morbidly obese. Little boy, overweight, probably 7, maybe 8 years old, big kid, real big kid, not morbidly obese, not yet, but he was well on his way. And you know how it is when you're in the market, you sort of crisscross with people and, you know, your basket, their basket, blah, blah. And several times I passed this family and their basket was full of the most disgusting stuff, sausages. And these, there was this one package of meat that they had. And I'm putting my hands down in front of me. The package of meat was about the size of a loaf of bread. And it was like, these giant sausages, they were like the size of a baby's arm. So just figure that out. See that in your head, a little baby, fat little baby arm. It looked like a little baby arm. And there were 8 or 10 of them in this big package about the size of a loaf of bread, and it was shrink wrapped. And their cart was just filled with meat and cheese and dairy. And I looked at their bodies and I thought, you're wearing it, man. And people don't put it together. They're not making the connection because we still have a government that tells us that our diets ought to be based on proteins. And some fats and some dairy and this and that. Look, what they're telling us isn't working. It's not working. We have to try something new. We have to take it into our own hands. If we want health and vibrance, if we want energy, if we want lack of inflammation in our body, if we want to be able to walk, run, play, think clearly, we have to take it into our own hands. Oh, man. I get so fired up about this because I'm learning this every day in my own life. My own PQR2 is about my own problems, about thinking clearly and moving easily and having no pain and no joint problems and having a body that I feel comfortable in. You know, one of the folks that I follow in the nutrition space has a real easy test for deciding if you're obese or overweight or not. It's called the mirror test. Get naked in front of the mirror. If you like what you see, awesome. If you do not like what you see, maybe it's time to make a change. And if you like what you see and you're morbidly obese, that's awesome too. You go. But that's not healthy. I'm not going to buy into this whole body positive thing. Oh, it's body positive. Oh, I want to call BS on that so much. And I'm going to say it right now, BS. That is an inappropriate belief system to say it's body positive. I'm going to accept it. Don't accept it. That's killing you. The fat around your organs is killing you. The fat running in your bloodstream is killing you. I have a girlfriend who is a nurse. She recently told me a story where she had to take some blood from a man. And as the blood was coming into the syringe, it was full of little white chunks that looked like cottage cheese. Whoa, that is killing him. That is killing him. And that kind of stuff is killing us too. We can't see it. Coming back to this kerosene idea, you're not going to drink kerosene, you know. But what about the meat, the cheese, the dairy, the eggs that's putting little chunks of cottage cheese into your blood? It's causing your gut lining to open up. You've heard of it. You've heard of leaky gut syndrome. Oh, some people have a leaky gut. No, people that have a leaky gut are creating it with the wrong foods going into their body and weakening the joints, the little tiny intracellular joints that keep the food where the food is supposed to be. The food and the fats and all of the different nutrient parts are not supposed to get into your bloodstream as chunks. Yes, it's supposed to get into your bloodstream as chemicals that your body has pulled from the food, but the food itself isn't supposed to travel around our bodies. It's half of the reason we are so sick. The other half is because we're doing it to ourselves. We're doing it to ourselves. So, the mirror test. You know, the mirror test is an important one. If you like what you see, okay. If you don't like what you see, take some action. And that's the hardest part, isn't it? You know, all growth happens outside of our comfort zone. It's so easy to be in the comfort zone. And I'm telling you this from my own personal experience. Look, I'm not perfect. You're going to look at me in the market sometime and go, well, you're still, you know, a little plump around the midsection. Yep, it's true. Pisses me off too. Makes me really mad because I work on it. But gosh darn it, as I get older, it's harder. So I'm hearing that. It's not as easy as it used to be. I'd look in the mirror and go, oh, I don't like what I see. I'm going to work on it. Boom. Shortly after, it was gone. But it's just not that easy anymore. And it's so hard. The struggle is real, but I work on it every day. And when I talk about, you know, all growth is outside of your comfort zone, what does that mean? It's comfortable to eat what you've always eaten. It's super comfortable to make recipes the way you've always made them. It's super comfortable not to have to think about something new, pull out some recipes, figure out how to use collard greens or kale or a blender to make smoothies or whatever. All those things are comfortable, but getting outside the comfort is like, oh, that means I gotta make some changes. Yes, it means I gotta do something different. Yes, I don't like that. It's hard. Yes. And what do you get from it? You get some results, right? Your problems that you're focused on generate the questions that you're asking all the time, identifies the roadblocks that are in your way to jump across that bridge to get to the results you want. Okay, so here's information that's going to help you get to the results you want. You know I love Dr. Greger at nutritionfacts.org. Nutritionfacts.org is a completely free website, completely free, guys, 100% free. And we have broad, wide, deep permission to use his information in any way we can to help make people more healthy. Now, Dr. Greger's story, short and dirty version, his grandmother was very, very sick. She goes to the doctor. They say, we're so sorry. We've done everything we can for you, from heart surgeries and stents and all kinds of stuff. You're not going to live any longer. Go home to die. She was 65. She went home to die. She has all these wonderful, beautiful grandchildren. She does not want to go home to die. She goes home to die. She somehow hears of Nathan Pritikin, who has got this amazing program that's doing fruits and vegetables and bringing people back to health from the brink of death. She goes to that program. In a few weeks, she's walking 10 miles a day. And before you know it, lo and behold, she is healthy, lives 31 more years on the planet. So from being sent home to die at age 65, she lives to be 96. And then she finally dies. Wow, that's, you know what? That's a pretty big improvement, I would say, in life, that you were sent home to die, but you still got to have another 30% of your life left. And she was in health when she, when she finally died, she was old. But what happened was Michael Greger said, wow, you know what? That happened for my grandmother with nutrition. I wonder what I could do with nutrition. He went to medical school. He learned everything he could about nutrition. He founded nutritionfacts.org as a tribute of love to his grandmother. And he now shares it completely free with all of us and any topic you can imagine, you can find in nutritionfacts.org. You go to nutritionfacts.org, and at the very top of the page is a search bar. So if you're dealing with diabetes, you type in diabetes. You'll find hundreds of articles, references, videos, podcasts, transcripts, everything you can. You can type in eggs and see everything that there is to know about eggs and your health. You could type in rheumatoid arthritis. You could type in metabolic syndrome. You could type in cancer, dementia, heart disease, the number one killer of men and women, heart disease. And heart disease starts really young because we're bringing up our kids. Like the one I saw in the restaurant in Grants Pass that doesn't stand a chance. That kid doesn't stand a chance. It's been 2 years ago since I saw that kid. That poor kid, I think about him now, maybe in middle school, maybe already in high school, and what's already going on inside his little body. He deserves a chance at a healthy life, but he doesn't even get that chance. He's not given an opportunity. I saw something the other day that was so amazing. It said, let's give our kids the chance to grow up without having to overcome or having to recover from their childhood. What? We don't want our kids to have to recover from their childhood? That's right. That poor little kid in the market the other day, mommy and daddy shoving sausages and processed meats down his throat. Again, these aren't a question of do these cause cancer? It is proven. I'm willing to bet that in somebody who's listening's lifetime, might not be my lifetime, there was a time when there were no warning labels on cigarettes. Did you know that? There was also a time when there were no warning labels on alcohol bottles. They didn't know, or if they did know, well, come on, you knew they knew that drinking alcohol during pregnancy would cause fetal alcohol syndrome. They knew that. But it took a long time before the label got on the bottle. And how about cigarettes? Do we know that cigarettes cause lung cancer? Yep. Did they fight like crazy to keep those labels off the packages? This will cause lung cancer. Yep, they fought it. But guess what? They're labeled now. Do you think there might come a day in our lifetimes or someone's lifetime who might be listening here where there could be a label on hot dogs and sausage and pepperoni that says this causes cancer? Boom! You know what? The food industry is going to fight like crazy mad against that. Of course they will. They're going to take a page right out of the big tobacco and big alcohol playbook that says, no, it's not clear. The science isn't clear. We don't know for sure. Yes, they do. And until people start demanding truth in advertising, demanding to know what's happening in their body when they're putting these products in, they might just continue to get away with it. But somewhere along the line, that tide will change. And people like Dr. Michael Greger at nutritionfacts.org are part of the solution, in my opinion, to helping people get healthier. Hey, thanks for hopping over here to KCIW, to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. We're on 100.7 FM on your radio dial or anywhere in the world on the podcast, and I'm glad to have you here. I'm your host, Misty Young, and we're going to talk about some of the top 10 nutritionfacts.org videos that happened in 2019. And why would we do that? Why would we care about those videos? Because those videos are telling us what people are interested in. These are the top 10 videos. I'm not going to look at all of them. We're not going to talk about all of them. I'm going to tell you what they all are. And you can find these just by going to nutritionfacts.org, top 10 videos, okay? So let me just tell you what those videos are. Number 10, time-restricted eating put to the test. Time-restricted eating is also called intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting is where you have a specific window for eating, a time window. So you might say, oh, I'm only going to eat, you know, in an 8-hour period a day. That's what a lot of intermittent fasting people do. They just have an 8-hour window where they're eating. Or they'll have a 6-hour window. Like, I'm not going to eat anything from all day long except from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's interesting. So time-restricted eating put to the test. Number 9, eggs and breast cancer. What? How few eggs should we eat to reduce the risk of prostate, ovarian, colon, and breast cancer? This particular video, number 9, remember, he does videos and podcasts and stuff every single day he's posting. So this is number 9. This is part 2 of a 3-part video series. If you go to this video, if you go to this top 10 nutritionfacts.org videos in 2019, you'll be able to click right onto this video and watch the whole series if you want to. Now look, it's not going to cost you hours and hours and hours. Each one of these is like 5, 6, 7 minutes. And every one of them comes with links to the scientific studies that will show you exactly where the information came from the National Institutes of Health, from the studies around the world, not just, you know, I don't want you to think like, Oh, this is just some vegan propaganda. This is science, guys. All right, number 8. Is it best to drink tap, filtered, or bottled water? Interesting. Dr. Greger says, when I was writing the hydration chapter in How Not to Diet, which is his newest book, I figured I should do a deep dive into the best water filtration system. So he puts that up to the test, which I love. Number 7, is butter really back? What the science says. Number 6, kidney stones and spinach, chard, and beet greens. Don't eat too much, he says, because of a high oxalate concentration. Number 5, the best diet for diabetes. Look, diabetes is absolutely rampant. It's an epidemic, a pandemic. People are getting diabetes. They're giving themselves diabetes. I don't want anybody here to be thinking, oh, well, I'm a victim. Oh, I'm a victim. I got diabetes. Type 2 diabetes. I got it. No, you created it and you can discreate it. Did you know that? You can reverse and cure diseases like diabetes, like heart disease, like cancer. You can reverse and cure these things from your body. And I know there's people out there like raising eyebrows and rolling eyes and saying, oh my gosh, what is she saying? I'm saying, go look at the science. I'm saying, look at what you put into your body. Look at what you put into your body. God, we all have to think about what we're putting into our bodies, because the fuel we put in is code for our cells. This is this big revelation I've had recently. Like, food is code. I'm not a coder. I don't know how to code. I'm learning a lot about coding right now in a completely separate, different project that I'm working on. And I'm super fired up about it. It's part of the reason I can't sleep. I'm learning some code. And I cannot help but see the similarities between garbage in, garbage out. You remember that from the 70s. If you're too young to remember that from the 70s, bam, here it is. If you put in garbage code into a computer, you're going to get garbage out on the screen. And guess what? If you put garbage into your body, you're going to get garbage out on the screen of your body. So when you look at your body in the mirror and you don't like what you see, you have to say, what garbage did I put in there to get this garbage out? Diabetes can be reversed. Okay, number 4, which is a better breakfast, cereal or oatmeal? Interesting. What about the importance of not just whole grains, but intact whole grains? What about that? The remarkable impact of the structure of food beyond the nutritional content or composition is what he goes into deep in this video. Hey, again, just a few minutes, 6, 7, 8 minutes max. And then you can look at all the links and all the other stories and the charts and the graphs and the photos and everything, nutritionfacts.org. Number 3, how to cook greens. We all know that dark green leafy vegetables are the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet, but what's the best way to prepare them? What about other vegetables? And I love what Dr. Greger says. He says, well, what's the best way to prepare leafy greens? Whatever it takes to get them in your body. Boom. Love it. Number 2, most popular video on nutritionfacts.org last year in 2019, the keto diet theory put to the test. Now, we're going to talk about this one. We are going to go in depth on this one. The keto diet theory put to the test. And number 1, the single most popular video in 2019 on nutritionfacts.org was number 1, evidence-based weight loss. Now, what I really want you to know is everything that Dr. Greger talks about in all of his work, every bit of it is evidence-based. So I want you to hear this. When I tell you that we're going to go and we're going to look at the science, we're going to look at the evidence-based science, right? I told you, it's not opinion. It's not like, oh, well, I thought maybe, blah, blah, blah. No, look at the science. We have to look at the science. Now, on this keto thing, right? The keto diet theory put to the test. Here we go. Let's talk about it. Keto and the carbohydrate insulin model. When you don't eat enough carbohydrates, you force your body to burn more fat. However, this rise in fat burning is often misconstrued as a greater rate of net or fat mass reduction on the body. But that ignores the fact that on a ketogenic diet, your fat intake shoots up as well. The question is, what happens to your overall body fat balance? You can't empty a tub by widening the drain if you're cranking up the faucet at the same time. So low-carb advocates had a theory, though, the so-called carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. Now, if any of this is like getting a little techie for you, just go watch the video. Let Dr. Greger explain it to you. It might be kind of hard, like I'm on the radio, I'm on a podcast. Go look at the video, look at the charts, look at the graphs. Okay, Proponents of low-carb diets, whether a ketogenic diet or a more relaxed form of carbohydrate restriction, suggested that the decreased insulin secretion would lead to less fat storage. And so, even if you were eating more fat, less of it would stick to your frame. So we would be burning more and storing less, the perfect combination for fat loss, or so the theory went. To their credit, instead of just speculating about it, they decided to put it to the test. So Gary Tobes formed the Nutrition Science Initiative to sponsor research to validate the carbohydrate insulin model. He's the journalist who wrote the controversial 2002 New York Times Magazine piece, "What If It's All Been a Big Fat Lie?" which attempted to turn nutrition dogma on its head by arguing in favor of the Atkins diet, with its bunless bacon cheeseburgers based on the carbohydrate insulin model. So much of Nina Teichholz's book, The Big Fat Surprise, is simply recycled from Tobes's earlier work. In response, some of the very researchers that Tobes cited to support his thesis accused him of twisting their words. "The article was incredibly misleading," said one. "I was horrified. He took this weird little idea and blew it up and people believed him," said another. "What a disaster. It doesn't matter what people say, though. All that matters is the science." So Tobes attracted $40 million in committed funding for his Nutrition Science Initiative to prove to the world that you could lose more body fat on a ketogenic diet. They contracted the noted National Institutes of Health researcher Kevin Hall to perform the study. 17 overweight men were effectively locked in what's called a metabolic ward for 2 months to allow researchers total control over their diets. A metabolic ward is essentially a place like you're kind of a hostage. Like, they put you in and the only things you eat are what they feed you. You don't get to pick anything else. There's no little, oh, I snuck a bag of Skittles kind of a thing. For the first month, they were placed on a typical high carbohydrate diet, which is 50% carbohydrate, 35% fat, and 15% protein. And then they were switched to a low-carb ketogenic diet, which is only 5% of calories from carbohydrate, 80% fat for the second month. Both diets had the same number of daily calories. So if a calorie is a calorie when it comes to weight loss, then there should be no difference in body fat loss on the regular diet versus the ketogenic diet, right? So if Tobes was right, though, if fat calories were somehow less fattening, then body fat loss would become accelerated. But what happened instead in the very study funded by the Nutrition Science Initiative was that body fat loss slowed upon switching to the ketogenic diet. What? Keto, water weight, and lean mass. Wait, why do people think the keto diet works if it's actually slowing fat loss? Well, if you just looked at the readings on their bathroom scales, the ketogenic diet would seem like a smashing success. They went from losing less than a pound a week on the regular diet in the 2 weeks before they switched to losing 3.5 pounds within 7 days after the switch to the ketogenic diet. But what was happening inside their bodies told a totally different story. The rate of body fat loss was slowed by more than half, so most of what they were losing was just water weight. The reason they started burning less fat on a ketogenic diet was presumed to be because without the preferred fuel, carbohydrates, their bodies started burning more of its own protein. And that's exactly what happened. So switching to a ketogenic diet made them lose less fat mass and more fat-free mass. They lost more lean mass. That may help explain why the leg muscles of CrossFit trainees placed on a ketogenic diet may shrink by as much as 8%. The vastus lateralis is your biggest quads muscle in your leg, shrunk in thickness by 8% on a ketogenic diet. Yes, the study subjects started burning more fat on the ketogenic diet, but they were also eating so much more fat on the ketogenic diet that they ended up retaining more fat in their body despite the lower insulin levels. This is diametrically opposite to what the keto crowd predicted, and this from the guy they paid to support their theory. In science speak, the carbohydrate insulin model failed experimental interrogation. In light of this experimental falsification of the low-carb theory, the Nutrition Science Initiative effectively collapsed, but based on their tax returns, not before Tobes and his co-founder personally pocketed millions of dollars in compensation. Wow. Now I want you to think about this. You can go out to nutritionfacts.org. You can read go look for the video called Keto Diet Theory Put to the Test, and you can read this yourself. You can watch the video, you can read the transcript, and or you can look at all the charts, the graphs, and other videos on that same topic. Now, what about greens? You know what? Before we go to greens, thanks for hearing that, because you know what? Keto diets are so the rage right now. Like, everybody's into them. Everybody's talking about, oh, I ketogenesis, like I got it. Do you know what it is? The idea is that your body craves fat and your body runs best on fat, but it's just not true. Your body stores fat. I mean, when you think about what the famous nutritionists out there are saying, and Dr. John McDougall is one of them, right? He's another one of these guys out there who's talking a lot about nutrition, and he says the fat you wear is the fat you eat, or said another way, the fat you eat is the fat you wear. Wow. You know, I'm blown away when I think about this, because some of it is so contrary to what we hear, what we know instinctively, you know, and I'm saying instinctively, in other words, what we think about in our PQR, our problems, our questions, our roadblocks. When we're walking through the market and we're looking at the tabloids and they say, oh, you know, a ketogenic diet is working, and you see the smiling, happy, energetic, vibrant person on the cover of the magazine telling you how great it was, then all of a sudden, you know, that's the right diet. But when you want truth, go look at the science. Go look at the science. Go to nutritionfacts.org, and don't even go to nutritionfacts.org. Go to the National Institutes of Health. Go to PubMed. Go to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There are so many other resources, but nutritionfacts.org is completely free, as are those other sites that I just commented to you. And nutritionfacts.org is designed for you and me. It's designed for a lay audience, and it's backed up by all the big wigs in science. So, come on. How to cook greens. Dark green leafy vegetables are the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. What's the best way to prepare them? Well, the main purpose of cooking vegetables is to make them more edible, palatable, and digestible. The downside, though, is that cooking may adversely affect the levels of nutrients, especially the heat-sensitive and water-soluble ones. But even if you boil greens for 10 minutes, the drop in antioxidant capacity, for example, which is a rough proxy for phytonutrient retention, isn't that much. Yes, there's a significant drop in each case, a 15 to 20% drop, but most of the antioxidant power is retained, even if you boil lettuce for 10 minutes. Like, nobody boils lettuce. Although, I have noticed when I go to Chinese restaurants or some Asian restaurants, like, soups have lettuce in them. Some of their soups have lettuce in them. So I've kind of started to take that as a yes to doing lettuce in my soups. The single nutrient that drops the most is probably vitamin C. But as you can see, collards start out so vitamin C packed that even collard greens boiled for 10 minutes have twice as much vitamin C compared to even raw broccoli. Now, when I say all these things are going to say you can see, what I want you to know is there's charts and graphs here. So if you go look at the video on nutritionfacts.org, the video is called How to Cook Greens. Okay, so you're going to see the charts and graphs, or if you come and look at the transcript, you can click on them. You can see the vitamin C in spinach really takes a hit. Even just blanching for 5 minutes can cut vitamin C levels more than half, with more than 90% dissolving away into the water after 15 minutes. Though most of the beta carotene, which is fat soluble, tends to stay in the leaves. But just keeping it in a regular plastic bag like you get in the produce aisle can protect it. The refrigeration is important, though. Even in a bag, a hot day can wipe out nearly 50%. Not as bad as drying, though, which can wipe out up to 90% of the vitamin C, suggesting that something like kale chips may pale in comparison to fresh kale, though vitamin C is particularly sensitive. Other nutrients, like beta carotene, are less affected across the board. So what does that tell us? I think it's telling us, cook them as little as you can. But let's see. Cooking by microwaving and steaming preserves the nutrition more than boiling, here measured in watercress. Again, you're going to see a chart there if you go. A little steaming or microwaving hardly has any effect compared to raw, though boiling even 2 minutes may cut antioxidant levels nearly in half. Watercress is a cruciferous vegetable, though, a cabbage and broccoli family vegetable, so it's prized for its glucosinolate content, which turns into that magical cabbage compound, sulforaphane. What does cooking do to it? Well, fresh is best, but steaming's not bad, with microwaving coming in second and then stir-frying and boiling at the bottom of the barrel. The glucosinolates and other cruciferous vegetables are also significantly affected by boiling. The researchers conclude that red cabbage is best consumed fresh. And look, not just in salads. As I talked about, Dr. Greger says in How Not to Die, I always keep a red or purple cabbage in my crisper to cruciferize my meals, slicing off shreds and putting it on basically anything. But if you are going to cook it, steaming may be the best bet so as to retain the optimum benefits of the health-promoting compounds. Do you have red cabbage in your fridge right now? Do you? Or purple cabbage? I don't either. And I try all the time to have some in there. Right now, I'm angry at myself. There's not any in there. And here I am, I'm talking about it, and there's none in my fridge right now. Most of the time, it's in there. And what I do is I find ways to incorporate it into my stir fries or my salads. I make this salad that's so amazing. It's just, you guys know I love iceberg lettuce. I'm done apologizing for it. It's full of antioxidants and it's full of water, which is good. And plus that, the last time I really went nuts on romaine, I got courtesy of all those cows in the fields nearby. I got E. coli, and I'll tell you what, that was not fun. I was so mad about that. It took me like 10 days to recover. Bad cramps. And I thought to myself, man, I used to eat animal products all the time, and I can remember cramps like this. Ew, gross, ew. So I will take my iceberg lettuce. I have all these gadgets in my kitchen. And I will take things like red lettuce and Brussels sprouts. Check this out. You can put Brussels sprouts down the tube of a food processor, like a little, you know, like a Cuisinart or something, a little slicer. Boom, you can slice them, you shred them. They turn into these little shreds. So they sort of look like, it looks like little cabbage pieces, but it's fresh Brussels sprouts. And they make your salads have this amazing texture. They're chewy. I mean, like I would never think to eat a raw Brussels sprout. But when I put them down into these little tiny shreds, they made my salads that much better. And the same thing is true with red cabbage. And I'm mad at myself that there's not a red cabbage in my fridge right now. That's on my list this afternoon. Yes, I just smacked my fist into my hand. I'm doing it again. Boom. Red cabbage today. Yeah, good stuff. Other nutrients we look to, back to Dr. Greger, he says, for greens are for the eyesight preserving nutrients like lutein, which he says he's talked about before, and folate, particularly important for women of childbearing age. And vegetables are the main natural source. It's been estimated, Dr. Greger says, that approximately half the folate is lost during cooking, which may be true for boiling broccoli or stir-frying spinach or mustard greens. But the folate in stir-fried kale holds up better, only losing about a quarter, similar to steamed broccoli florets. But do note that broccoli starts out so high that even boiled broccoli has more folate than raw spinach. But check out broccoli leaves. Oh my gosh, I used to throw the leaves away. I can't believe I used to throw the leaves away. And some of the stalks, I used to throw that away too. Like I would cut off all the florets and then I'd be like, oh, the rest of that is trash. No. I cut the stalks now down into little pieces and put those in my salads. They're so good. Or in my little stir fries. Oh my gosh, they're so, so, so good. And the leaves too. And then the last part of the stalk that I don't use, I cut into small chunks like the size of a marshmallow, and I throw those in the freezer. My friend Sherry told me, yeah, throw all your vegetable scraps into the freezer. And then, you know, when the bag gets big enough, bring it out and boil it and make your own broth cubes. I was like, what? I couldn't believe she told me to do that. So I did it. I've done it a few times now. I've taken all my veggie scraps, every veggie scrap, the ends of celery and carrots and onions and zucchinis and, well, obviously the broccoli and any squashes, anything, any veggie scraps, I throw them into this baggie in the freezer. And when it's time, the baggie gets too big. And it is a baggie that I've used and used and used. I've gotten really into this whole crazy baggie laundry cycle where I hand wash my baggies and I air them out to dry because I want to reuse that stuff because I want to be kind to the planet. But I also want to be kind to my internal planet, my body on the inside. So when I make my stir fries now, I don't use oil anymore. I pop out a couple of these vegetable broth cubes of vegetable broth that I made myself. So I'll boil all these veggie pieces down into little, I just boil, or then simmer for a long time, simmer off a lot of the liquid, and I end up with this really rich, dark, beautiful stuff. And I strain out all the vegetable matter. Now I just have this clear liquid. I throw it into these little veggie cube things that I got, Dollar Tree, you know, I got some more just somewhere. You can pick them up anywhere, little squares that have lids on them. I throw them in my freezer, and when I'm ready to make a stir fry, that's what I saute in now. It's crazy. And I'm stunned that I don't need avocado oil or olive oil or sesame oil to do my stir frying in. And the food is so, 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 so good. Boy, that wasn't a rant, but I know I kind of went off on a tangent there for a second. Note that broccoli starts so high that even boiled broccoli has more folate than raw spinach. Boom. Check out the leaves. Don't forget the leaves. Not only do they start out with the highest levels, the levels actually go up a bit when you cook them. No one's ever looked at the folate concentration in broccoli leaves, which ironically are commonly just cut off and thrown away, yet they contribute great concentrations of this vitamin. Therefore, we should make sure to eat them. Note they also compared thinly sliced kale to kale just torn into larger pieces to determine if a larger surface of exposure would promote greater losses of folate in kale. What? Sounds so weird, right? However, no effects were found, so slice away. Here, they just looked at stir-frying. What about the effect of other cooking methods on kale? Well, there's lots of studies on cooking cabbage and broccoli. However, very little information has been available on the queen of greens until now. The queen of greens, of course, is kale. First of all, fresh versus frozen. And when I say the queen of greens is kale, I gotta tell you, I don't really like kale. I just don't dig it. I don't like the texture. I don't like the flavor. I don't like kale. I try to like kale. I bring home the lacinato kale, aka the dinosaur kale. That is the single most nutritious kale you can get, and I hate it every time, and I buy it every time, and I'm trying so hard to incorporate it into my life. I even make myself put it into my smoothies. I make this nice cream. Oh my gosh, the nice cream is so good. I take frozen bananas that I froze myself, chopped them up, froze them, and then I take blueberries, and I put those into the Vitamix and I throw the kale in there with them. And the kale, really, you can't taste it. I know I'm getting the benefit of it. It's the only way I can choke it down. Yeah, that sounds weird, right? Like, here's this lady telling you, eat your kale. I hate it too. If you hate kale, I hate it too. But you know what? I used to smoke, and the first couple of times I had a cigarette, I hated that too. Oh, I grew to love it. I think I smoked for 5 years. I mean, I was a young person, really young. I think I started smoking like when I was 16 or something, 15 maybe. Ew, gross, ew. Oh, that's been decades ago. Okay, back to first of all, fresh versus frozen. The freezing process is generally regarded as destructive to antioxidant compounds. One just assumes that frozen would have a lower antioxidant capacity compared to fresh, but kale breaks all the rules. The frozen kale showed a higher antioxidant capacity than fresh. What? And not by just a little, we're talking 60% more. Wow. Okay, so what happens when you cook it? If you start out normalizing the starting levels at 100%, blanching and steaming actually boost the antioxidant content, whereas microwaving or even boiling doesn't seem to do much, so you can boil kale without losing out on its antioxidant punch. Dr. Greger says, I told you kale's a rule breaker. But check out that blanching and steaming. Heat can disrupt the plant cell walls and the little subcellular compartments and spill out extra antioxidant compounds that may have been hiding. Now, that's usually counterbalanced by losses caused by high temperatures, but the kale compounds are looking pretty cruciferous and stood their ground. I think he said cruciferous. Yeah. He wants us to know it's cruciferous. Ugh, ferocious. You know, we got to be fierce in our protection of our health. That's why it sounds so kind of counterintuitive, right? Like, oh, I hate kale. I don't want to eat kale. Well, you know, sometimes we got to do things we don't want to do. All growth is outside the comfort zone. You know, maybe the first time in your life that you ate broccoli too, your mom had to really convince you to eat broccoli. Most of us like broccoli now. There's an acquired taste. I'm acquiring a taste for kale. And I have never actually bought frozen kale before. I think I'm going to give it a try. I'll let you know one of these days. Okay, which is a better breakfast, cereal or oatmeal? We know that this is one of the most popular videos on the top 10 videos of 2019 on nutritionfacts.org. Now, we're coming down to the end of the show, so I'm probably not going to be able to read this entire article to you, but I'm going to try. We know that there's a remarkable impact of the structure of food beyond nutritional content or composition, okay? So food structure, as we just heard when we were talking about kale on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial or anywhere in the world, any time of day on the Ocean Mist Power Hour podcast, welcome. I'm your host, Misty Young. We're going to finish out this episode by talking about food structure, and we're going to talk about, is oatmeal or cereal better for breakfast? Well, food structure, not just nutrient composition, may be critical for optimal health. It should come as no surprise that Corn Flakes and Rice Krispies cause a much greater spike in blood sugars than rice or corn on the cob. But it's not just the added sugar. Even with identical ingredients, food structure can make a major difference. That's why there's this whole push in the world these days for whole food, plant-based living, whole food, actual food. Like instead of eating fractionated, torn up, crushed up, ground down, this and that, eat corn on the cob. For example, if you compare the absorption of fat from peanuts compared to the exact same number of peanuts ground into peanut butter, you flush more than twice the amount of fat down the toilet when you eat the peanuts themselves, since no matter how well you chew, small bits of peanuts trap some of that oil, and that makes it down into your colon. So small bits of peanuts trap some of the oil that makes it down into your colon. And the physical form of food not only alters fat absorption, but carbohydrate absorption as well. For example, rolled oats have a significantly lower glycemic index than instant oatmeal, which is just oats, but in thinner flakes. And oat flakes cause lower blood sugar and insulin spikes than powdered oats. Same simple ingredient, oats, but in different forms can have different effects. Well, why do we care? Because the overly rapid absorption of carbohydrates after eating a high glycemic index meal can trigger a sequence of hormonal and metabolic changes that may promote excessive eating. Oh, there we go. They took a dozen obese teenage boys and fed them different meals. Each got the same number of calories and just followed them for the next 5 hours to measure their subsequent food intake. And those that got the instant oatmeal went on to eat 53% more than after eating the same number of calories of steel-cut oatmeal. The instant oatmeal group was snacking within an hour after the meal and goes on to accumulate significantly more calories throughout the rest of the day. Same food, different form, different effects. Whoa, that's crazy. Instant oatmeal is not as bad as some breakfast cereals, though, which can get up into the 80s or 90s, even with a cereal with zero sugar like shredded wheat. The new industrial methods used to create breakfast cereals, such as extrusion cooking and explosive puffing, accelerate starch digestion and absorption, causing the exaggerated blood sugar response, added sugar or not. Shredded wheat has the same ingredients as spaghetti, just wheat, but has twice the glycemic index. When you eat spaghetti, for example, you get a gentle rise in blood sugars. If you eat the exact same ingredients mated to bread form, though, all the little bubbles in bread allow your body to break it down quicker. So you get a big spike in blood sugars, which causes our bodies to overreact with an exaggerated insulin spike. Oh, that is so hard to deal with, because isn't bread amazing? Isn't bread just amazing, right? Well, yeah, because it causes all these spikes and hormonal rushes, and like, bread is feel-good food. But you know what? All growth happens outside the comfort zone, and bread is definitely comforting. And if I want to grow in a new way in my nutrition and in my health and in my vibrance and in my energy, bread is probably not going to be a big part of that. Wow. So I'm going to read that again because I think it's important. It says, when you eat spaghetti, you get a little gentle rise in blood sugars. But if you eat the exact same ingredients made into bread form, all the little bubbles in the bread allow your body to break it down quicker. So you get a big spike in blood sugars, which causes our body to overreact with an exaggerated insulin spike. And that actually ends up driving our blood sugars below fasting levels, and that can trigger hunger. What? So you eat bread and you get more hungry? I hate this. Experimentally, if you infuse someone with insulin so their blood sugars dip, you can cause their hunger to spike, and in particular, hunger cravings for high-calorie foods. In short, lower glycemic index foods may help one feel fuller longer than equivalent high glycemic index foods. This is fascinating. Researchers randomized individuals into one of three breakfast conditions: oatmeal made from quick oats, the same number of calories of frosted flakes, or just plain water, and then measured how much people ate for lunch 3 hours later. Not only did those who ate the oatmeal feel significantly fuller and less hungry, they indeed went on to eat significantly less lunch. Overweight participants ate less than half as many calories at lunch after eating the oatmeal for breakfast, hundreds and hundreds of calories less. In fact, if you notice, again, charts and graphs, The breakfast cereal was so unsatiating that the cornflakes group ate as much as the breakfast skipping water only group. It's as if the cereal hadn't even been eaten for breakfast at all. Feed people Honey Nut Cheerios and hours later they feel significantly less full, less satiated, less satisfied, and more hungry than those fed the same number of calories of oatmeal. Oh my goodness, how many kids go to school on that breakfast every day? Though both breakfasts were oat-based, the higher glycemic index, reduced intact starch, and reduced intact fiber in the Cheerios seemed to have all conspired to diminish appetite control. The trial was funded by the Pepsi Corporation, members of the Quaker Oatmeal, pitted against the Cheerios from rival General Mills. And an expose on industry-funded study manipulation later revealed that the original study included another arm, Quaker Oatmeal Squares. "I'm sorry that the oat squares did not perform as well as hoped," the researcher told Pepsi, which decided to publish only the results about its oatmeal. Wow! Okay, now remember, you're going to go and look this stuff up. Don't take my word for it. Go look at nutritionfacts.org. Go look at these videos. Go look at the video, which is a better breakfast cereal or oatmeal. And then do the math for yourself. Did you hear what they just said? What Dr. Greger just said essentially was, you're going to feel more satisfied and less hungry at lunch if you eat oatmeal versus something that's been crushed. Same exact stuff. Oats are oats, right? But the format that you eat them in changes the resonance in your body. It changes the way your body receives it. So if you're eating crushed up, processed, ground down, remanipulated cereal, it's going to change the way your body responds versus if you eat oatmeal. Now, that's not exciting, right? It's like, I don't want to eat oatmeal every day. Okay, well, how about oatmeal with strawberries, oatmeal with blueberries, oatmeal with bananas, oatmeal with maybe a little bit of date sugar on it, or dates. Oh, God, I love dates. There's a lot of different ways to do oatmeal. And oatmeal's not the only thing. Yesterday for breakfast, I had a broccoli, mushroom, onion stir fry. Yeah, I had that for breakfast. It was so outrageous. It was really good. And of course, the stir fry base was vegetable broth that I cooked myself and took the little ice cube out, boom, threw it in the pan, and boom, threw in all my veggies. And that was what I had for breakfast. Oh, and there was a healthy amount of garlic in there too. Gary's like, garlic for breakfast? I'm like, yep. So I really appreciate you being here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm so thankful you spent time with me to listen all the way to the end. Well, you know what I really want? I want to help you with your own problems, questions, and roadblocks to help you get to your results. PQR2. There's two R's at the end. If you want results in your life, you got to step outside the comfort zone. If you want to grow, you got to push. You got to eat some kale. Maybe some red cabbage, maybe some oatmeal. Thanks again for joining me on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. It's been a pleasure to be here with you today on the podcast anywhere in the world or right here on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm Misty Young, and I'll see you again soon on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Bye-bye now.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.